Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out.
Elvis's cry for help. Dude's way mentally unstable to write this song. Should have been a sign to everybody around him. We need to do an intervention. An intervention. And save the king. Yeah, I should have called Chris Kling over in Arizona. Yeah, if you know anybody that's looking for help doing an intervention, Chris Kling, man. He supports families that do intervention. If you haven't heard that interview on All Marine Radio, you should check that one out. Crazy as a loon, man. And then the cape only, come on. Who wears a cape? Batman? Hi, I'm Batman. I'm Batman. I'm Batman. Oh my God. Speaking of Batman, I saw a video yesterday somewhere, I think on Facebook, and it had to do with parents scaring their kids. Oh man, I almost pissed my pants. It was so funny. I should post it. If I can find it, I will. It's hilarious. Why do parents think scaring their kids is so funny? Because one of the things you'll hear in that video is, right, when it happens, and a lot of the kids are little. Elvis. Hey, Mike, do you want my prediction on the elections? Of course. It'll be a mixed bag, like it always is. I can't walk out. So we'll have a greater majority in the Senate for the Republicans and a small majority in the House for Democrats. And nothing will get done. This is what got Trump elected in the first place. So 2020, what will become of that? It seems to be the answer for the parties is not, as Senator McCain, and then he says in parentheses, I'll use your word, opine from the floor of the Senate, regular order, compromise, and doing the people's work. It is, we'll turn out more of our voters and we'll get our way. Even if they do, those majorities around the nation will be very slight. And so nothing will continue to get done, which only fuels what got Trump elected. That's my prediction. Write it down. I don't have to. You already typed it there, crazy one. That's not a bad prediction. It's pretty, I would say, that's pretty close to what's going to happen. So, alright, here's what civility. I opine. Opine is the word of the day, by the way, in case you haven't noticed. I opine about civility on a regular basis. When serious stuff happens, I miss Tim Russert. I miss Charles Krauthammer. I miss the McNeil Lear NewsHour. Why have they not been replaced? Interesting. So I did a little search on civility and politics, blah 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 blah. Up jumps this thing from C-SPAN. Carolyn J. Lukensmeyer is an executive director this wire. Well, you're going to hear her right now for the next 41 minutes, okay? With me interrupting. So, stand by.
We're joined now by Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She is the executive director of the University of Arizona's National Institute for Civil Discourse. She also was previously the founder and president of America Speaks, an award-winning nonprofit that tried to engage citizens and leaders through innovative uses of public policy tools and strategies. And she served as consultant to the White House Chief of Staff from 1993 to 1994. Carol Lukensmeyer, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be with you.
So the National Institute for Civil Discourse, we haven't heard a lot of civil discourse lately. Tell us what your organization does.
Well, the Institute was created in 2011. After Representative Gabby Giffords, the assassination attempt on her life in Tucson. Gabby really was an elected official that worked in a completely bipartisan way, the way she introduced bills, her friendships. So the University of Arizona and the community of Tucson came together very quickly and said, we have got to make something good come out of this horrible tragedy. So we are founded in order to see if we can have an impact on the incivility and political dysfunction that now dominates our country.
And how do you do that?
Well, we work with three target groups. We work with elected officials, both here in Congress and in state legislatures. We work with journalists, and we work with the public. One of the things that is really unfortunate about where we are in the country is that our mass media messages and our political messages are all negative. And yet if you dig beneath that in states, in communities, and sometimes even nationally, there are a lot of positive things happening that can give us hope that we can right this situation that we're in. There's no question. Americans are completely disgusted, embarrassed, ashamed, angry, frustrated. Those are the words we hear in every community that we go to. Weber Shandwick, a well-known Washington, D.C. communications firm, does a civility poll every 2 years. In their 2016 polling, 95% of Americans say that incivility is a serious problem. 77% of Americans say recognize that we're losing stature in the world. 64% say they've just stopped watching politics altogether.
You know what? I think that there's a movement to be had. I think that there's a movement to be had relative to this kind of stuff, just say, just shut it off. I'm committing not to watching any of the 24/7 news garbage bins. Yeah, and let me just tell you, the NFL has got the message. Okay? They may not be talking about it too loud, but trust me, they're noticing their numbers, and they know veterans are a part of that. Just turned it off. So, maybe there's a movement to be had out there. Just shut it off. All right. We continue.
And you know, the stat that really worries me the most, 38% of Americans, almost 40, say that they just think that's the way it is now, that that's what politics has to be.
We want to let you know that you can join in our conversation with Carolyn Lukensmeyer from the National Institute for Civil Discourse. We're going back to traditional phone lines for this segment. So Republicans, your number is 202-748-8001. Democrats, the line is 202-748-8000.
Perfect. The crazies are going to be calling in here pretty soon.
Independents, your number is 202-748-8002. You can also send us a message on Twitter. The handle is at CSPANWJ. You mentioned that many Americans feel like the level of discourse we have now is just the way that it is. Are we in a unique period, or is this different from what we've experienced historically?
Well, political scientists track that pretty closely and have really been doing research about it. And their judgment is that the incivility in our politics and in our communities is the worst it's been since Reconstruction. So there's no question.
Okay, just in case you don't know, Reconstruction, that was post-Civil War, okay, which was a moderately substantial disagreement in American politics. Yeah. Since Yeah, that means it's more substantive, our disagreement now. The question is why over what? Like the 60s, you could lay it on Vietnam and, you know, America kind of growing up as a nation. Blah, so why now?
Question. But what we have been on a downward slope in terms of our lack of respect for each other when we speak, the ideological absolutism about issues. When people disagree on an issue, they don't hear each other's reasoning. They don't hear enough to understand why they hold those views. They actually indicate that if you don't think like I think, I'm a better person than you are. Yeah. And that is not the natural state of affairs.
And what have you all found is driving this polarization of the public and the increasingly heated rhetoric that we hear on both sides of the aisle?
Well, again, there's been a tremendous amount of research and analysis that...
This is very interesting, so pay attention. Right? I expect you to take notes right now in this portion of the program.
Many structural issues. Too much money in politics. The way primaries work, which drive both parties to the extreme to get through the primary election. Some of our most extraordinary statesmen, Bob Bennett in Utah, Dick Lugar in Indiana, have essentially been driven out of their statesmanship work in Washington by an ideologically dominated primary process. So most of what has driven us here, frankly, another piece that I know you would speak about, is the media's business model has changed in a way in which so much more of what's covered in mass media about politics is really celebrity and entertainment rather than driven by news.
What does Matt call that? Newstainment, right? Slicked up version of the Jerry Springer show.
One of the problems, these structural issues, it took us decades to get here. It'll take us decades to reverse that direction.
Perfect. I'll be dead just when it starts.
So that means that today, to make a difference about this today, we have to rely on people. It has to be how Americans, who are very frustrated and tend to disengage because of how incivil politics have become, what we actually need to do as citizens is step in and speak up. We need to let our congressmen know that Congress should hold hearings for a Supreme Court justice because that's constitutional. Politicians need to hear from their constituents. It's not okay for me, I'm one of your constituents. It's not okay for you to jump on the bandwagon of the anti-Muslim rhetoric that has just seeped into this presidential primary process. So the best antidote for right now is Americans understanding that all of us, the vast majority of us, want this to change. The only way it will change is if we speak up.
And just for full disclosure, you all affiliated with any political party?
Thank you, and I should have said that. No, we are completely nonpartisan. Our goal, American democracy is a very unique system, and it was a system built to not allow any majority to completely control a policy discussion, completely to control how resources are used. So compromise was the essence of the American political system.
Oops, we don't compromise anymore. What happened? So our system doesn't work. Whoa.
And yet we've now in this ideological war, there are whole groups of people who say compromise by definition is against my ideological stand. So no, we're completely nonpartisan.
Let's turn to the phone lines, and our first caller comes from Kalispell, Montana.
Okay, this will be really interesting to listen to the perspective of the callers. I haven't heard this part. This is where I put it on pause.
The Republican line. Tom, good morning.
Yes, I attended a sporting event at the University of Arizona, and it was a three-day event. I would like the person that's sitting there to attend the sporting event at her school and see how uncivil the people are, the players, the coaches, and the crowd. Tell me how you would react to that.
Tom, I'm very sorry that you had that experience, and my guess is that is an experience that is replicated at sporting events all over this country at this particular point in time. It's unacceptable. That is not what should happen in collegiate sports at any point in time. But we've almost made sports at the collegiate level like the Roman theater in terms of it's a place where people get out their emotions and where they are overtaken in their support for their team to again be uncivil to the other spectators and teams. I'm very sorry you had that experience, and unfortunately, I know that it's not just at the University of Arizona.
Robert from Frostburg, Maryland is up next on the Independent Line. Robert.
It is part of our culture. In your face, boom, right? I'd have never done that when I was a kid. I got slapped. You did what? Well, we won and we said boom, or I won a point and I said boom. That's not the way our culture is. So is that part of the disrespect? Might be. Might be a little piece in the mosaic of how you get to where so intolerant, so disrespectful, so uncivil.
Right, go ahead.
Good morning, ma'am. How you doing?
Good morning.
Okay, look, I definitely understand that all avenues of reporting things to our public authorities seem to be closed off to citizens. I'm a disabled Vietnam veteran. I reported some veterans who were being physically abused at a Prairie Point, Maryland VA hospital. And the Secretary of Veterans Affairs under Mr. George W. Bush did come in and intervene. Ever since then, I have been blackballed. I mean, just lied about things I could not believe. I've had four of my Vietnam veteran friends who've committed suicide over this kind of behavior. Some of the things that have happened to me, falsifying records, calling police. I mean, I can't believe my America is like this.
All right. Robert, thank you very much. And I know that the issue is very, very profound for veterans, frankly, particularly from Vietnam as well as Afghanistan and Iraq. One of the things that the National Institute for Civil Discourse has done in order to give citizens more of a voice, we've created a software platform that works with texting on your phone. It's called Text Talk Act, and we've actually run that program specifically for vets on the issue of suicide. Robert, you might want to take your cell phone and just text 89800, and in the message line write START. And that will take you to a platform that is still today alive to talk about mental health issues. Again, Robert, no American should go through what some of our vets have gone through in terms of getting adequate medical care when they return. I guess I would also hope that you may have tried to contact your congressman. That is another avenue which should get your voice heard on what is happening to vets in your area.
And you guys have also launched Text Talk Act for millennials as a way to get them engaged in the political conversation as well. Tell us about that.
Yes, after the shooting of elementary children in Newtown, President Obama called for a national discussion on mental health. And I was invited by the administration to lead that discussion. Six organizations collaborated. We've worked for 2 years. More than 300 communities have participated deeply in this. And frankly, when we saw how young people are ready to stand up and say that the stigma that has impacted mental health in this country is wrong, we actually created this platform I just spoke about. And we do several focus days. April 19th was the last one. Our partner was Active Minds, which are college campus groups who are young people with lived experience with mental health challenges. More than 5,000 young people across the United States participated 4 days ago. We'll do it again on May 5th. But part of why I'm here is to talk about we need not to just do this on the issue like mental health. We need to do it about the election campaign we're in. So we will soon be launching the same platform to be Text Talk Vote, which will enable millennials to connect to TurboVote to register to vote if they haven't, will enable millennials to actually look at the issues, both sides, again, completely nonpartisan, to compare where the candidates are on the issues, and hopefully that will be extraordinary support and motivation for them to vote in 2016.
From Trenton, New Jersey, Craig is on the Democratic line now. Craig, good morning.
Yes, if you're talking about civility, you don't need to go any further than to just listen to the radio, like somebody like Rush Limbaugh. They're totally non-civil. They call people names on the radio. They say things they could never get away with saying on TV, and it goes on hour after hour after hour. I think he has a 3-hour show at night, and I would challenge you to turn it on and listen to all 3 hours of it. It literally makes you sick.
All right, Craig from New Jersey.
Craig, your point is very well taken. You have focused on the Rush Limbaugh program. Unfortunately, that's another arena in which Americans very strongly feel that all outlets of the media, in fact, millennials will say that it is the online blogosphere that is the most detrimental in incivility in their lives. More than 60% of Americans actually believe and feel that now the media is part of the problem, that they're actually creating incivility. They're not just reporting on incivility. But that's another thing our organization is working on. We convened with the Newseum here in Washington and the Poynter Center from St. Petersburg, Florida, 35 working journalists from all four media, from television, radio, newspapers, and the Internet. And we actually engaged them in a conversation. Incivility in the media, what can journalists do about it? That work was so inspiring that we have now moved to the next stage at those journalists' recommendation, which is to go deeper, but bringing together journalists, elected officials, and citizens themselves. So we did that in Ohio. Everyone in the country knows Ohio is an important swing state. Everyone may not know that more money is spent on television advertising every presidential campaign than any other state in the union. And it's hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's mostly negative, and the public is sick of it. So in this workshop, where we brought together all three elements that have to make our democracy work, Americans should know 30 news outlets in Ohio are collaborating in a strategy during the presidential campaign to engage the candidates, not so much on their predefined platforms, but based on very sophisticated polling on things like the economy, immigration. When the candidates come to these media outlets, they're asking the candidates the questions that the citizens of Ohio most want to hear about. Very important work, and we'll have a chance to see at the end of this election cycle what impact it has had.
And what were some of the outcomes for the elected officials and for the citizens out of that workshop?
To me, one of the most extraordinary things that we all witnessed and has turned into an action step were young people of color in the state of Ohio, very passionate about experiences they had of voter, what they call voter suppression, particularly of minority groups, polling places that had been closed, lines that were too long. In the same workshop, the gentleman who'd been the president of the Senate for 2 terms, an extraordinary leader, Republican leader in Ohio, was aghast at what he heard because he had spent part of his leadership doing things in Ohio to make it more possible for people to vote. 28 days you can vote in Ohio. So here we have these two realities sitting right in the same room. And unfortunately, in most environments today in this country, if that clash had happened, it would have erupted into serious conflict, lack of respect. In the context in which we were working, which were people were committed to listening.
You're listening to Carolyn Lukensmeyer. She's the executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse at the University of Arizona, talking about civil discourse. The thing about those television stations is this. Will they turn down the money from the negative ads? No. God, no. Right? Political campaigns are huge financial windfalls that are programmed into the operating revenues of both radio and television outlets, and now Internet outlets. Huge. Huge. Huge.
What happened was those young people of color and this former president of the Senate have worked together over the past months to say, this is real. Some people didn't get to vote. This is real. Structurally, we've done good work in Ohio. Let's present both of these pieces of data to the current Secretary of State and see what we can do about it for 2016. So the point is, when you put Americans in a context, whether they're elected officials, citizens, journalists, where they actually feel safe enough to speak what's true for them, but they also commit to listening respectfully to what's true for everyone else, they do exactly what de Tocqueville said about us in 1837. They let go of the ideological or the party differences, and they come together to say, how can we solve this problem?
Charles from Richmond, Virginia, is joining our conversation next. Charles, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm listening to what the lady is saying, but we're discussing civility and politics. And I think about one particular high-profile Republican, I'm not recalling about his name, but what he has done, he has purged the Republican Party, because the Republican Party has been in a bad shape for the last eight to 10 years. But when you speak in terms of civility, let's talk about what these politicians are saying. I'm not going to call anybody's name, but politicians shouldn't lie to people and tell kids, especially young people, what they can do, what they can have, because they're going to turn off these young people from voting later, because they don't vote now. If you expect to get them to vote, you have to tell them the truth. And you have another politician that's talking about getting rid of the IRS. Well, who's going to take up the money? I mean, this is basically.
All right, Charles, we hear you this morning.
Charles, your point is very well taken. I think one of the things that Americans are really concerned about is that the rhetoric in this presidential primary campaign, and many are fearful and predicting that it will be worse or as bad in the general, because these people who are running for president themselves are using language, themselves are making it sound like it's okay to be violent under certain circumstances. So we've got young people all over the country watching people who are held up to us as role models behave this way, and it begins to legitimate. It begins to make it okay for me to bully if I'm in high school. Or we've seen examples in elementary school where small white children or early age in elementary school say to children of color, if so-and-so is elected president, you'll be leaving this country. You won't be in school. This is outrageous, and this is not what America is about.
Is there a chicken or egg issue here, though? I assume some of the candidates might say that they're merely reflecting the anger that already exists and the concerns that already exist amongst the American populace.
That is a question that comes up all the time. And this is a place where there's tremendous data to say that the creation of this hyper-partisanship and this absolutism about values, it did start first with our elected officials in Congress. It is now impacting and pulling more people with them. But to date, as we sit here, it is still true that our people are more likely to stay civil than our politicians.
Mike from Laguna Woods, California, is our next caller on the
Before we hear from Mike, this is a C-SPAN event. It was done a year ago. It was done in 2017. But it's on civility. It's on civility. And I find it very, very interesting. I believe this. Our culture has changed, right? The culture that I grew up in, and I'll just say how it reflected in sports, okay? In particular in baseball, if you did something on a baseball field that was disrespectful to the other team, they threw at you and you fought about it. Okay? Then it started with the bat flip. Oh, he's just celebrating, right? You know, he's just celebrating. And so it's not really in your face. He's just celebrating. Okay, and we've all watched that. Now to the point where how do you say that's not in your faith? And so, do young kids understand this? No, they don't. And so you have somebody get elected. Can you imagine your kid going to school and telling another student, hey, you're going to get deported? You know? Do we see that culturally? But that's what you get now. Boom, in your face, not enough brains, you know, not to do that over sensitive issues, you know, and to be respectful of other people. So to me, that's what this, it's all about respect. All about respect. Where has it gone in our culture?
Independent line. Mike, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, ladies. In my view, the ideological focus is misdirected. In my experience, civility is actually very effective. My principle is love the sinner, hate the sin. And civility is also patriotic. I think the national press deserves a lot of the blame in this. They provided one particular, in my view, a crude demagogue with more coverage than all the other presidential candidates combined. Now, that coverage might be merited if it weren't so patently stupid. Case in point, in responding to criticism, this particular candidate is a one-trick pony. He reliably reacts with argument ad hominem. And just as reliably, the press fails to call him on this fallacy, and it is a logical fallacy. May I have your comment, please?
Well, thank you. I think there's no question that most Americans, whatever their party affiliation, actually would agree with you that at the beginning of this campaign, the amount of earned media that was given to particular candidates did not at that point reflect a following of the American public. Now, it has turned into a following of the American public. But I do believe your point is well taken. And it comes back to what I said, you know, traditional journalism and media has shifted profoundly in the last few decades. At this moment in time, six families.
So what they're talking about, Donald Trump's overheated rhetoric, he did not have a national following at that point, right? He did not have the following to merit the coverage that he got. But that changed. And ultimately, he became the president of the United States because, in my opinion, part of the reason is he tapped into what the media likes, gave it to them, and his coverage went through the roof. And therefore, he got more and more support from people that heard him, as opposed to if he would have, you know, got his support, got his coverage from, you know, by the number of followers that he had convinced. So Donald Trump uses the media against the media. Right. I mean, he literally sucks the air out of the room because he gives them what they want. And they hate him for it. But they're so deeply in bed with him, it's ridiculous.
Own all the primary broadcast and print elements that are available to the public. So the business model has shifted much more to an entertainment celebrity kind of coverage, as opposed to what had been traditionally more true for several decades, the decades since World War II, which was the media as a source of balanced information across the ideological spectrum on issues. So you may ask, what can the public do in terms of pushing back about this shift? And one of the things that I think is very important is when you, in your hometown, where you watch, what media you watch, when you see something that is unacceptable to you, we mostly feel like there's nothing we can do about it. But it actually can make a difference if a lot of people pick up the phone and call the line to that broadcast station, or if you write a letter to the editor of your newspaper, if there's been unbalanced coverage of a candidate in your community, it can, in fact, make a difference. We really have to come together as the American public and revive civility. It is a patriotic value. It is part of the core sense of how we could come together across 2+ centuries and fashion such an extraordinary economy and culture with so much difference right from the beginning. And yet we've now fallen back to a period where we treat differences, if it's a problem, instead of recognizing it as it always has been, is an extraordinary asset to who we are as a nation.
Bob from Tahlequah, Oklahoma, sorry about that, is on the Democratic line. I hope I didn't butcher that too badly, Bob.
No, it's okay. You do great work. Good morning. It's Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Yeah, it's a Cherokee capital nowadays. Yeah, I think you're doing great work there. Good morning to both of you. And
good morning.
You're doing good work. This is very important. I couldn't agree with the previous caller more. He articulated what needs to be repeated over and over again. And to articulate more on what you were saying, you were using words after the previous caller to describe the situation at hand, like we don't recognize certain things while we do other things mindlessly. And I think this kind of goes back to the whole situation of the complicity of the media. And, you know, we want people to be involved, so there's this encouragement to get people involved. But then we're on the air now. This man that just called in articulated quite well what the problem really is. And yet, how do we stay with that issue rather than going back to the overall general romper room of the public, which is going to draw in a lot of people who are frankly uninformed? So we've got to, in the media, have some responsibility and come back to square with, you know, how do we identify what is reason, what is truth, what is legitimate authority, instead of being complicit and continuing this charade of illegitimate power in our country.
Well, again, I think you and the previous caller have both put your finger on a very important element of how we've come into this situation of such a degradation of our civility and the dysfunction in our politics. And as I said earlier, what has brought us here are some very significant structural things that have taken decades to come to be. And there are good things going on to try to change that. An organization called Fair Vote that's working on how the primaries work, that's working on open primaries so that independents could vote in primaries, which would make a huge difference in terms of who our candidates are. So one of the things we try to do on our website is point citizens to the resources where you can work on these long-term problems. But in the meantime, we're sitting today in April of one of the most contentious, uncivil presidential campaigns in history. So at this moment in time, what's most important when you understand it as clearly as you understand it is think of a way in your community. Think of a way that you could, maybe it's work with the League of Women.
I stand corrected. This is in April of 2016, not 2017.
Voters. Maybe it's work with tribal leadership in this particular unique situation. But some way come together with other people in your community who share this view. At the National Institute for Civil Discourse, we are getting tremendous support from the public to really essentially almost create a campaign kind of process to revive civility. And we hope you will join us.
You mentioned the workshop you held at the museum for journalists. You guys also held a civil discourse workshop in Idaho, according to the story from KBOI TV. How do you create that safe space for discourse? And what are some of the things that you guys focus on and teach during these workshops?
I'm actually so glad you asked that, because one of the most important things we're doing and one of the things that we see is most hopeful, and that other than like the coverage in Boise when we were in Idaho, the story doesn't get out nationally. We have a project that's called Next Generation, in which we go into state legislatures and we start with a basic workshop that we call Building Trust Through Civil Discourse. We always make sure that leadership has supported it so they won't cut the knees off like happens here in Congress. We always make sure that it's a balanced group of about the same number of Republicans and Democrats, and there are a few independents in state legislatures. We come together for about 4 to 5 hours, And first of all, we have the legislators themselves define the ground rules for how do we want to behave together during this 4 or 5 hours. So we don't impose those. We actually open up the table to say, and most of them have really had bad experiences themselves on the floor. I'll never forget a new member in the Ohio legislature. It happened to be a Republican woman who in the workshop said, at the end of it, she was so pleased. She said, but now we have to have another workshop. And this workshop has to be, how do you start the conversation with someone who called you evil on the floor yesterday? So these things are happening, but the members, because state legislatures are more closely connected to their public, they get more pushback in the grocery store. They get more pushback at school. So they know they have to produce legislation on the issues that matter. So they want to come and figure out a different way to treat each other and a way to come back to a place where there's bipartisan support for bills to pass. We've now worked in 12 states. More than 450 state legislators have participated in this. We've created a national network of those state legislators who actually every 2 weeks participate in conference calls and come together regionally for face-to-face meetings. Each year we give the Gabby Giffords Award to a Republican and Democrat or a group of Republicans and Democrats in a particular state that have done unusually solid work and have really reversed a negative trend in their state. We'll be doing that again in August.
All right. Kevin from Greensboro, North Carolina, is our next caller on the independent line. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning. I clearly understand that civility in politics is a task, you know, for politicians. And with the whole world looking at us now, you know, our candidates that we have in the forefront seem to be continuously recycled. So my question is there any legislation in the political election system that requires civility in election today from the politicians?
This is a very good question, Kevin. There is no existing national legislation requiring civility. Because what I was just talking about the work we're doing in state legislatures, interestingly enough, the state of Colorado has introduced a proposition which actually sets out what they see as civil behavior, both in how they treat each other and how they treat people who testify in that state. So we're beginning to see this. Del Mar, California, I believe, is the first city in the country that the city council and mayor have actually passed a code of civility that they expect everyone in the community to stay connected to. Gary, Indiana, has just April 14th initiated something called World Civility Day.
Gary, Indiana used to be the murder capital of the nation, by the way. Holy shit.
In which they had 300 people from both Indiana and other states, and I believe, if I remember correctly, it was 13 people from other countries participating. You mentioned Idaho earlier. The City Club in Idaho has actually developed a year-long agenda in which they talk about what is the responsibility for civility in Boise and in Idaho of every sector. So they've, 1 month they've looked at the legislature, another month they're looking at education, another month they're looking at the judicial system. So we actually have started a network of organizations around the country that are committed to doing exactly what you said. In whatever way appropriate, putting the principles of civil discourse where we listen respectfully to one another. It's not to force agreement where there isn't agreement, but frankly, what the whole field of conflict resolution and mediation has always understood, if you can create the safe space, if you can understand why I think like I think and what's important to me, we almost 100% of the time discover that we have more common ground than we expected to discover. We also learn that in our political culture, certain words start to be flashpoints. I want to go back to what I talked about in the Ohio workshop and the issue of voting. I will never forget a moment when a young African-American woman in that process said, the most important thing I've learned here is that I know of many tens, hundreds of people of color that did not get to vote. But if I call that voter suppression, the very people I need to hear me won't hear me. So she said, I'm not sure what to call it, but I want to work with you to change it. So we've got a whole bunch of language that is owned either by the D's or the R's, and when we start to use that language, it just escalates. So part of what we have to do, in addition to what you were calling for, a legislative base for civility, is to start to really think on an issue that I care deeply about. Am I using language that by definition someone who thinks differently than I think will just stop listening to me?
You know, it's really interesting being involved, having been involved in government, that you know somebody's serious about solving a problem when they come to you with a problem and don't alienate the opposing side from the get-go with the language they use, the rhetoric that they use. Very interesting. And you can see the mood of the room change. But that happens so rarely, right? That happens so rarely. And everybody talks about this stuff, but in terms of, well, you know, when should I go negative? They all do it. Why? Because sex sells. So what saves us from this?
Andrew from Middleton, New York, is up next on the Democratic line. Andrew, what's your question or comment today?
Thank you very much. My question is this, that the role of the media in restoring civility in politics is so great. Unfortunately, in our current presidential campaign process, we have seen how the media has misinformed the public in regard to what the issues are and where the issues are. How then do we, through the media, restore that sense of rightness and truth to our political system in such a way that we don't misinform the public?
All right. So I'm going to go back to the example of the work that we did in Ohio that the Ohio News Association, the Ohio Broadcasters Association has just picked up and run with. You know, we always think about the big, we call the media as if it's one big thing. We think of Congress and we sort of castigate it as all of the same ilk. I think what we find in any institutional situation, some people are pushing forward trying to do the right thing. Other people have fallen into the pattern that you and other callers have described. What we need to do is where we can impact it locally. We need to discover who are those anchors that it's clear from how they speak. Who are those newscasters when it's clear from how they speak that they want to go exactly where you want to go. And then how can media themselves develop partnerships where, as I talked about in Ohio, they're now holding a different standard. When they interact with the candidates, they're not starting from the candidates' positions, which, as many of you in the calls have said, may be not fact-based. But rather they're starting from the key questions that people in Ohio care about our economy, about immigration, about educational reform, and then they're sticking to their guns, so to bad metaphor, I apologize, they're sticking to their positions, that the candidates have to respond to fact-based issues that Ohioans care about. This can be done. It will be slow. It's hard work. But we each have to find where's the place I can take a stand and how can I join with other people who also know what we have to do.
And our last caller for this segment will be David Englewood, David from Englewood, New Jersey, on the Republican line. Go ahead, David.
Yes. First, I just want to correct the people. Rush Limbaugh does not come on at nighttime, so it shows you that the caller nor the lady there knows what they're talking about. Not that I'm defending him. My point is, for example, in New Jersey, I'd like for her to speak out on two things. The politicians have lied to us for so long That's the reason that people are upset. And the media, you talk about the media. How can we trust the media when we know 90-plus percent of the media, the reporters, are going to vote for a Democrat? Now, let me give you a good example. Right, you talk about the Supreme Court nominee of President Obama. Do you know that right here in New Jersey, Governor Christie nominated a person to the Supreme Court, and the Democratic-controlled legislature refused for 2 years straight to even hold a hearing. He nominated a Democrat. And guess what? Within 2 weeks, that person got a hearing before the committee, and it was unanimous. So what about this kind of partisanship? What about the lies from the politicians about, oh, you can keep your health care if you want it? And the media is not trusted.
All right, so David, we'll have to leave it there because we are just about out of time. Carolyn Lukens-Meyer, your final thoughts.
Well, what comes to my mind most at the moment is a famous quote from President Lincoln, really around the Civil War, when he spoke about the fact that where we were, everyone has to make a choice. Do I come from a place of better angels in my character, or do I go to a place of baser instincts? And we're at a time when it feels to Americans like our institutions are operating from baser instincts, that they are not treating us respectfully, that they are not acting with integrity as we think those institutions should behave. In part, that may be true, and in part, it may be false. But that is really what Americans are carrying, as we've heard from all the callers this morning. So I think we're at a point when Americans have lost faith in our institutions. It's going to take decades to rebuild that faith, to rebuild that trust. In the meantime, we have to commit. We have to have faith in ourselves to step up, speak out, find a way to take positive action to revive civility in your home, in your school, in your community, and yes, the next step in this presidential campaign.
Carolyn Lukens-Meyer.
That is Carolyn Lukens-Meyer. She is the, I'll find other things. When I listen to it, to me it sounds like a fool's errand because there's too much money to be made being uncivil. And, you know, she can march around the walls of Jericho all she wants. It would take an act of God to reverse what is going on. I think until you have a movement that says shut it off, and a lot of people just shut the news off from all 24/7 news outlets, and get their news somewhere else, saying that, hey, I don't want to see this kind of garbage. I want more articulate discourse, right? And it can be heated. That doesn't bother me, but I don't want it to be disrespectful, and I don't want it to be stupid. So anyway, we'll take a break. Gunnar Sutz, join us next. More of Almarine Radio coming up on a Monday on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute, heard every Wednesday right here on Almarine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on Almarine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Readboard page at AllMarineRadio.com.